New week post Labor Day, Tuesday, September 6th, 2022 on Connecticut Today. We took a look at the kidnapping and alleged murder of Tennessee teacher and mom Eliza Fletcher and wondered why the main suspect in the case with a violent criminal past was back on the street. We also heard remarks from Connecticut Attorney General William Tong on a class action settlement involving the maker of Juul vaping devices. But a big story, unfortunately, over the weekend that everybody was tied into, simply because of, listen, the elephant in the room here. We know what that is. This is a guy who, now, let me just say, this is alleged. Okay, we don't know what, you know, if any of this is going to be proven, but we have to say up front that, you know, whatever charges we're looking at here in this abduction and death of Eliza Fletcher are, in fact, charges. Everything is alleged to have happened, but, I mean, come on, everybody knows what's going on here. Eliza Fletcher's body found over the weekend. She was abducted while jogging in Memphis on September the 2nd. A man approached her, forced her into an SUV after a brief struggle. 38-year-old Cleotha Abston arrested on September 3rd after cops detected his DNA on a pair of sandals near where Fletcher was last seen. Memphis police say the officers in the 1600 block of Victor Street located a deceased party, and that was last night on the evening of September 5th. Her body was identified early Tuesday. Listen, let's cut right to the chase here, because, you know, you don't have to go into the gritty details here, the grisly details. But again, this is, and I talk about this all the time, all the freaking time, over and over and over again. If you look into this guy's record, this Cleotha Abston, this animal out there, this guy has been bad news since the time he was a kid. Okay, I'm not just saying that. Look it up. You can find his criminal record. Now, some media outlets won't do it, but there are others, you know, who are, you know, showing that, you know, he was committing crimes in his early teens. And then held a guy at gunpoint. This guy, Cleotha Abston, had already once in his life kidnapped somebody, right? So what he did over the weekend to this woman, and please, can the people in my business stop doing one thing? She's an heiress. She was an heiress to a big fortune. Well, you know what? That doesn't make a difference. She was a woman who went out for a jog, albeit early in the morning, not something I would advise any woman to do in this day and age with the sickos out running out there, the animals that should be put behind bars here and left there. But again, I'm not going to victim blame here. Everybody does what they want. It's a free country. But back to the notion here. Again, why is it in society? And let's start with this today. I don't get it. You know, I was discussing this online with a journalism friend of mine at another outlet over the weekend, and I had posted something, and this person had come back with, you know, it's amazing this still happens. You know why it's amazing it still happens? Because we, as a society, and I don't know what it is, whether we're afraid to take the heat, that we're judging people, or everybody deserves a second or third chance. You know, here in society, we're just afraid now to confront evil and say, you know, there's a segment of society that shouldn't be back on the street for decades. Decades. I mean, they just shouldn't be there. But, you know, for some odd reason, you know, for some odd reason, we keep releasing them. And do we honestly think that someone who has previously committed a heinous crime, like kidnapping someone, taking somebody against their will, you know, do we actually think that person is going to be cured? Honestly? Come on, stop it. Okay, maybe 1 out of 100, 2 out of 100. This guy has a juvenile record dating back to when he was just 12. His charges, I'm reading from one of the summaries I'm seeing about this suspect. His charges here, aggravated assault with a weapon, rape and kidnapping when he was 16. 16. He was a teen, and he was kidnapping people. He was sentenced to 24 years in 2001, but guess what? He's back on the streets in 2020, and look what allegedly happened over the weekend. So I don't know. You help me out here. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. And I got to tell you, it is incumbent on every political candidate in this election season, locally or all around the country. You should be asked about that. Honestly, I don't care where you're running, Republican or Democrat. You should be asked by that. You should. This is ridiculous that we let people like this back on the streets after he kidnapped somebody in his teens. What, are we out of our minds? I mean, seriously, we have got to be out of our minds. What are we so afraid of to say this person, that guy, that woman, whatever, is an animal and needs to be kept locked up? Well, Paul, you know, 20 years for kidnapping is a long time. Apparently not. Apparently not. Apparently it wasn't a long time. And by what I'm seeing here, if this story is accurate, did he serve out his whole sentence? I don't think so. But my God, and you wonder why people buy guns. The left doesn't get it. You anti-gun people, you don't get it. When are you going to stop being sheeple and get out there and protect yourself? I'm reading over the weekend about two more women who were accosted at gas stations in the area here in Connecticut. Ladies, I'm telling you, get a hammerless Smith & Wesson 38. They fit in the palm of your hand. You can put them in your pocketbook, your bag. Put them in a little holster under sweatpants or running shorts or whatever. Seriously, if this isn't an example of the sickos, the nuts, the animals we let back on the street. You know, if think about this. How often do you see stories about this? And Ron and Alex, hang on. We'll be with you in a second to kick off the phones here at 333-9422. How often do we find, you hear on the story here on WICC or you watch on television, whatever, News 8, 6130 around this day, and officials today had their hands full when a tiger got out of a zoo or an alligator escaped its enclosure or a snake got out of the, yeah, and you know what we do? We put them back in the zoo because they're dangerous for people. But now, whether it's these leftist DAs, whether it's soft sentencing judges, or whether there aren't enough people to say, hey, this one's too far gone, sorry. You know, like when your car is totaled and you go to the insurance company, yeah, this one is totaled. But again, now you see what happened. A guy with a criminal record a mile long was for some reason allowed back on the streets of society, and now you have this young mother and wife of two kids, and yes, an heiress to some fortune, but this guy was apparently too stupid to understand. He didn't know about the heirs. He was an animal looking for prey out there. Oh, my God. When are we going to wake up? When is society going to say, you know what, kidnapping, no, you don't get 20 years, you get 50. Well, that's a long time, Paul. You know, people can change. Yeah, and a lot of them don't. Too bad. All right, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Why do we keep letting violent criminals back on the street? Well, Paul, they've served out their sentences. Well, sentence them longer. Again, if you have a rabid animal in a zoo, and that animal is said to be a threat to people for 3 years, and at the end of 3 years, the animal is still bloodthirsty and wants to kill someone, would you let it out? Now, I know some people would, because that's the circle of life. Most people wouldn't. Alex is in Milford. Alex, hi, you're on WICC. Hi there.
Hi, I was hearing you talk about the mother, and that's the story and fear in me, too. It's so sad that she has to lose her life and her poor family over some sicko. It's just mind-boggling. I like your comparison about the rabid animal. It's so disgusting. It's just awful.
And this guy had a record. I mean, it's not like he was a first-time offender. If you read about his record, Alex, you sit there with your mouth open.
I did. I saw that. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, oh, my God. I forgot what state it was in. It doesn't make a difference, but it's just so sad. I feel so bad for, like, nobody should lose their life over some other you-know-what. It's so sad. Oh,
no,
my God.
It is. It is. Alex, you're breaking up a little,
it's
but thank
right.
you. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Alexandria there in Milford. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it. It's awful. Can you imagine if that was your daughter or wife or granddaughter or niece or something like that, and all she did was go out for a run in the morning? It's all she did, as millions of other people do. Now, I did see some idiots, some morons, some real cavones out there over the weekend saying, well, she shouldn't be out running at 4:30 in the morning. She can run whatever damn well time she wants to. Here's what shouldn't be out there. Convicted criminals who are lifetime criminals. And I don't care what race, what nationality, what gender, what pronouns they use. If you are a threat to society, which this one apparently was, And some of the people who defended his release are now saying, well, he was okay for 2 years. Yeah, that's great. And Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? We know that other stuff happened at Ford's Theater the other night. How was the play? It is, folks, I'm telling you, our disregard for public safety in this country, because we're always making excuses. Well, he had a tough childhood. Well, he hung out with the wrong crowd. Well, it was COVID. I'm surprised nobody's blamed this on COVID yet. You know, COVID drove him crazy. So he was stressed. His COVID relief never came through. So he decided, I'm going to go out and kidnap someone and kill somebody. I'm surprised we haven't heard that. Because every time that happens here in Connecticut, oh boy, do we hear that over and over again. Well, you know, there's pent-up pressure because of the COVID pandemic. Shut up! Oh, my God. According to a TV station in Memphis, Cleotha Abstin was eligible for release after 85% of his 24-year sentence and got out sometime in the past 2 years, quote-unquote. What is sometime? He was also charged with aggravated robbery at one time. His sentence on that count was 11 years, but it appears to have run concurrently, stemming from the same offense. You know what that means? That if they had that sentence run consecutively, he still would have been in jail. But these judges, these prosecutors, these no-good district attorneys look to say, hey, listen, we got to keep the conga line moving. Another case coming up. And here's my favorite, too. Well, we don't have the prison space. I have an idea. Build more prisons. How's that? Got lots of remote land in this country. A lot of construction workers would like that gig. Build a few more cell blocks here. Listen, I'm not for throwing everybody in jail for the littlest offense here. I hope I've made myself clear on that over the past 3 or 4 years I've been at this wonderful operation, all right? You don't throw somebody into jail for breaking a few windows or even maybe on a first offense on a robbery or something. But this guy? Come on. Who in their right minds thinks that somebody who kidnapped someone at 16 years old, and I don't care what the reason is, bad upbringing, he fell out of the high chair, he snacked on pain chips, he got abused by his parents. Frankly, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. But the bottom line is, had the sentencing guidelines been better, and again, why do we sentence people for X amount of years if they only serve 80 to 85% of the sentence? Why do we do that? Why do we do that? Well, Paul, that's the way the system is. Why is the system that way? If somebody gets thrown in the clink for 25 years, you know how long they should serve? 25 years. How's that? Earlier today, Connecticut's Attorney General William Tong announcing that the folks that make the Juul vaping products, J-U-U-L, not J-E-W-E-L, but J-U-U-L, have settled with several states, including Connecticut, on a rather large cash settlement in response to accusations that they were marketing their products to kids.
This afternoon, we are announcing that Connecticut has entered into an agreement in principle with Juul, the once dominant manufacturer and purveyor of vape and e-cigarette products in this country. The agreement calls for a payment of at least $438.5 million. That number can get bigger depending on how quickly Juul pays the settlement amount. Connecticut will receive at least $16.2 million from this settlement, and this is a settlement in principle with 34 states and territories. So it's a very large contingent of states, a very large number, and it is a multi-state that Connecticut led with a handful of leadership states, but Connecticut was essentially in the lead in this investigation. And I want to thank, let me start off by thanking Mike Wertheimer, our consumer protection chief, for taking the lead on this investigation from the jump, and our team, Assistant Attorneys General Jonathan Blake, Amor Rosario, paralegal Casey Ryback, and many others on our team who played a really critical role. I cannot overstate enough how important this team has been and how difficult it was to pull these 34 states together when other states had already entered into some settlements. And the company is under some financial pressure, significant financial pressure, so it made this negotiation really difficult. Also, this agreement sets an entirely new bar for injunctive relief. What does that mean? That means mandates that the states are putting on Juul, telling them what they're going to do and what they're not going to do, and they're not going to do a lot. Principally, they're not going to target young people and children. And that's a huge step forward. The injunctive terms, the mandates that we're putting on this company are among the toughest, not just in vaping in our investigations around vaping and e-cigarettes, but among the toughest in any multi-state case since I became Attorney General. So let me start there with kids. So my kids are all finally back in school, 16, 14, and 11. Sasha, my son, started school this morning. I dropped him off before I came up here. And it, for those of us who have young kids or kids in high school, this continues to be an extremely challenging time. You know, we're trying to come out of COVID. We're trying to get back to normal. But the threats that they face are more significant than ever. And one of the terms I learned this summer from my kids was, it's a new word for me, it's screenager. So my daughter Eleanor, who's 16, said, "Bob, I'm not a screenager," which if you think about it means she doesn't spend all her time on her screens on her phone. And that's one set of risks that our kids face. And that's why we're investigating Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and the harms that social media can bring to kids. Well, one of the harms that comes through social media and came in particular through Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok was marketing by Juul. Juul, interestingly, didn't use traditional media. Our investigation dug into their marketing strategy, and it's really interesting that they didn't focus on television, print, radio, traditional media that gets at people like us, right, with some gray hair. What they did was they focused on other outlets, including Instagram and TikTok, to a lesser degree, Facebook. And they, of course, engaged with influencers, right? Famous celebrities. They used messages that focused on young people. They had these launch parties. They used images, technology, trendy images, technology-based images. They used young and trendy-looking models. Everything was sleek and technology-focused, and it was clear they made a product that could be easily concealed when used by kids. And what's really shocking about our investigation, when I started this investigation, we knew that young people were the targets of Juul's marketing efforts. But we found, for example, in our investigation, that on Juul's Twitter account, 45% of the followers of Juul's Twitter account are between the ages of 13 and 17. Only 20% are older than 21. Think about that. Fully half of their Twitter followers are people that should not be using their products, that cannot use their products. And one of the huge problems that we found is that their age verification systems, whether at the retail level, which was frankly a joke for a long time, or on their websites, were porous. And they knew this. They had experts telling them that their age verification procedures were not working and they did nothing, or they didn't do enough. And so as a result of that, what I would call predatory marketing, 27% of high school students in Connecticut reported using vape. 27%, more than a quarter of kids my kids' age and their children. Let's be clear, 13 to 17, they're still kids. More than 25% are using vape in Juul products in our state.
All right. Earlier today, that's Attorney General William Tong talking about a $400+ million agreement. Juul's got to pay up sooner than later and promise not to do things that they were doing, as General Tong said there, to attract young vapers. And I've always said, listen, I support. I don't use it. I have adult friends that do. But if these companies are caught, whether it's alcohol, tobacco, marijuana, vaping, if they're directly appealing to, underage kids in high school and junior high, well, good. We should bring the hammer down on them and the unscrupulous retailers that sell this stuff as well.